Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Circles of Prosperity. I'm Cynthia Johnson, of course. I'm here with Dr. Reggie Johnson and Gloria Wells. And we are your hosts this morning as we bring to a close Breaking Free from Critical Addiction. Oh, and as Gloria says, and the crowd says, yay, we're roaring through it. It has been such an awesome journey, and I always say that, right? Oh, my God, this has just been so awesome. Oh, this is just so wonderful. Every book that we do is awesome because they are all anointed. Every person that receives the impetus, the idea to write a book, they are actually inspired by that divinity that is with them, by their higher self. And so I'm so grateful for those expressions. Are you guys grateful for those expressions? Yes, we should be. That divine energy is here to uplift us, to make us aware. And when a person takes out the time, edges out the time to, or ekes out the time to sit down and to listen to the higher self and to put those thoughts on paper and then have the courage to put their name on it and then have the courage to stand by it, to come and talk about it and share with you, we should all be so grateful. This wasn't an easy journey, was it? No, because it forced us to look deep inside of ourselves at the ugly parts of us, I won't say ugly, at the challenging parts in our personality, the challenging parts of our emotions, and to face them and to say, I love you. I love it. I love it when you say, I'm sorry to you. Please forgive me. Say that to you. Say that to your inner child. I love you. And it's okay. It's okay. And then we begin to unfold. Isn't that something? Isn't that beautiful? We're unfolding, we're blooming, we're blossoming so that nothing but love, which is our true natural state, only love exists. Oh, that's just amazing. We are so divinely created, so divinely. We are magnificent beings. And so sometimes in order to see how magnificent you are, you have to look at how you're covering it up, you know, with rust and tarnish. But when you uncover it, oh, and you begin to get a glimpse of your beauty, oh, man, you're getting ready to do miracles. You're going to do miracles. Dr. Reggie.
Yes.
How are you this morning?
I'm doing great.
Oh, my God. Gloria.
Yes, good morning.
Talk to me, girl. Talk to me.
Well, I am excited. I'm excited about this book study coming to a close today. I'm excited for everybody who's come along on this journey with us, whether you were live or in our archives. I'm just excited to have been a part of that journey. So, and of course, I'm very thankful, just like you said at the beginning, about the author and people who take that time to, you know, share their knowledge with us and stand behind that knowledge. So it's been an awesome journey, and I've enjoyed the process.
And listen, this is her first book study, and I just think she did a fabulous job. It took a lot of courage for her to do this.
Courage. What makes the flag on the mast to wave? What makes the elephant charge his tusk in the misty mist or the dusky dusk?
Courage.
the muskrat god his musk? Courage. What makes the Sphinx the seventh wonder? Courage. What makes the dawn come up like thunder? Courage. What puts the ape in apron cut? What have they got that I ain't got?
Courage. Courage. Yes, indeed.
Hey, Gloria, you are just, you're the lion. You took it on and you said, and you recognized that you do have the courage, and you did a wonderful job. I embrace you. I honor you. Listen, anybody that wants to give a shout out to Gloria this morning, please press 1 on your telephone keypad. I know she deserves to get a pat on the back. Keep it short because she's got to take us into this closing, but I want her to know how much you love her and appreciate her.
Absolutely.
So the number here is 914-338-0590, and we just want to send her out with a bang today. But she'll be in our chat room. She'll be in our chat room.
Yes,
Dr. I'll Reggie, go ahead and take us into our opening prayer.
Okay. Heavenly Father, we thank you, as always. First, upon arising in the morning, we don't have to. Many people are not with us anymore. And we thank you that we have the impetus and the energy and the structure from the Holy Spirit to wake up every morning, renewed, refreshed, and invigorated in the power of Spirit. We thank you for Gloria for presenting a fantastic and wonderful program in critical breaking free from critical addiction. And you know she lives her thoughts because she's in that energy. And we thank you for letting her share that with the audience. She did a great job. We thank you for her. We thank you for Circles of Prosperity and all the people who listen, going up towards 10 to 20,000 listeners. These people are all being impacted from this station and from the messages that are being imparted through the power of your Spirit. We thank you for that, and that we're energized, and that we are alive, and that we are powered by the Spirit of the Holy Spirit's energy. We believe it is so as we go forth now with great understanding and great wisdom, and so it is.
And so it is. Wow. Okay, Gloria.
All right. Well, I do want to say that I am a Leo, so that makes me a lion. So I'm thrilled that I was able to muster up some courage. I thought that was the cutest thing. Cynthia, thank you so much. Thank you so much for starting the show off like that. And I just want to say I appreciate you so very much for giving me the opportunity and believing, you know, in the vision that I saw in this book. That means the world to me. Without that, I don't know if I would have had that kind of courage to get up and present this information, because it wasn't, you know, it wasn't it wasn't that easy to take a look at parts of us that, you know, we oftentimes try to intentionally keep that part of us put away. So, you know, it just wasn't that easy of a book study to do. So I'm just so grateful for all of the support that you and Dr. Reggie have given me through this show, and I'm just grateful for that. So I want to get started today, and I want to get ready to finish out the last chapter of the book. And at the end of me finishing that out, I'll kind of recap some of the things that I've personally been able to take away from this book study. And we'll see, you know, where it goes from there in terms of the summary. Okay? All right. So Kaylee starts out this very last section of the book talking about peace as a social value. She, like I said yesterday, she talked so much at the beginning of this book about how society has this addiction. That's actually the name of this book, Breaking Free from Critical Addiction. So she started out telling us what critical addiction was, and that society has, as a whole, has accepted criticism as normal, as okay, and even applauds criticism, you know, and judgment of others. So today we're going to talk about peace as a social value. So she starts this chapter out by, or this section out by saying, is it realistic to believe that our society can become peaceful? One of the most common assumptions about the human race is that we are warlike species, and therefore only the strongest will survive. However, recent archaeological evidence of our oldest civilizations suggests that warfare is unnatural to the human race, becoming a habit only during the last 5,000-year cycle of civilization. The theory of survival of the fittest is a concept that has been used to justify competition and capitalism, but it is not based in fact. Survival of the fittest is an economic theory first introduced by Herbert Spencer, in which he drew parallels to Darwin's theory of natural selection, a theory that has been discredited by many scientists. Survival of the fittest is a way of thinking and living that perpetuates criticism, competition, and warfare. It is a way of thinking and not a fact at all. In part two of this book, we showed you how behavior is based on subtle levels of life, which include thinking, beliefs, and attitudes. Change the thinking and the behavior disappears because it is natural to love and connect, not to compete. For this to change, education is essential. Now, we know that both war and criticism are learned behaviors. Children are not born critical, and the human race is not created warlike. What happened to us? While we may never know the answer to that question, we are capable of learning a new way of living together that is natural, spontaneous, and joyful. Many people in our society are beginning to value peace as we take a more personal responsibility for creating peace within ourselves. Each and every day, new methods of stress reduction become popular and more people incorporate them into life. Not only are we learning to relieve stress in the body through meditation, exercise, and diet, but we are also learning how to change the way we see the world. So we don't get so stressed in the first place. Prevention is preferable to cure. Why should we wait until we're in pain before we seek peace? One of the most astounding discoveries is that blissful, altered state of awareness, commonly thought to be available only through deep states of meditation, are actually available to us while we're in the midst of activity and fully participating in the world. The common experience of a runner's high is only one example of the bliss that can be found in any high-performance state. The practice of mindfulness introduced to the West by Buddhist monks demonstrates that we can have a bliss as part of our daily life by bringing our awareness into the present moment and living in a fully present way. Pure presence is pure bliss. The past and future only exist in our minds. The present moment is the only place where God is. Okay, so there she's reminding us that, first of all, it's somewhat of a belief, a long-standing belief, that only the strong survive, that it has to be survival of the fittest. She's discrediting that original stance that has perpetuated like capitalism and competition in the marketplace. That's what's been the driver for, you know, building, you know, big businesses and competitions and mergers and all of this. It's because of this underlying principle that only the strong survive. And I've also heard it say that we're more cooperation-based, that we're naturally cooperators. You know, our natural instinct is to cooperate and share and with one another, but the way society has it set up is it's survival of the fittest. So everybody's trying to get to the top, trying to, you know, make a life that is comparable to what society says is okay. So it's really all about just cooperating and sharing what we have with one another. That's what really produces bliss and extends our bliss, allows us to sustain that level of happiness. So she ends that section by saying, the future only exists in our mind, and so does the past. The present moment is the only place where God is, which is why it's so important for us to stay right here in this moment, instead of projecting out in the future or pulling from our past experiences. It's important that we stay right here, right now. Okay, so we're going to move down into the law of reciprocity. So she says there is a spiritual principle that says giving and receiving are one in truth, which is actually the law of reciprocity that repeats on all levels of life. We end up experiencing whatever we give out or extend to others. This principle goes by various names. It's called karma in the East. The Bible says a man reaps what he sows. Reciprocity means that you receive positive or negative results depending on what you sow. So if you treat others badly, the cost of giving is receiving, which can hurt you or make you sick. I call that instant karma. The negativity from this is how we feed the inner critic. Knowing this rule, wise people of all religions made laws and gave guidance to protect their people from negative consequences of their own actions. Jesus said, "Do not judge so that you will not be judged." The ethic of reciprocity, also known as the Golden Rule, appears in several forms in just about every, if not every, religion in the world. They all seem to agree on how one person should treat another. You should treat others the way you want to be treated, because you always feel the reverberation of your actions. What goes around does indeed come back around, as the old saying goes. When my husband's three children came to live with us, they fought a lot and they were defiant of rules. I understand them, and there was only one rule in our home, and it was the Golden Rule, which states, treat others the way you want to be, them to treat you. They could understand this rule. It made complete sense to them. In fact, they loved it. I would frequently see one of them shaking their finger at the other, saying, Golden Rule. They never objected to being reminded of the rule because it meant that they could correct their own actions. It also put us an equal footing with them. We had to follow the Golden Rule as well, or they would remind us to do so. It stopped the fighting between them, and it helped us to live happier lives. I made copies of the Golden Rule with different pictures and sent them home with couples and families, whether they were religious or not, because it is a universal ethic. Every family invariably made positive changes using this rule. Their children initiated many of the changes when they pointed out that their parents' behaviors needed to change. We all know when we are being treated kindly. We just need to apply that same understanding and consideration to our own behavior. Children love the Golden Rule. It gives them the principle to live by and solves many of their problems. Children need structure and guidelines. The Golden Rule can solve many of those social problems as well. It is natural for us to live in cooperation and unnatural to live in competition. Cooperation brings harmonic resonance and creativity. Treat others the way you want to be treated. Okay, so there she's telling us about the Golden Rule, and then she also has a chart in the back of the book that shows that, like she said in that part, it goes through every religion. That particular rule is in a lot of religions, so she's pointing out on the chart in the back of the book how each religion actually adopts that universal ethic of the Golden Rule. And so I'll just share one of them. The Christianity one is, judge not that ye not be judged. Treat others the same way you want them to treat you. And that's from the Bible, Luke 6:31. So she gave us those examples there. I'm going to move on now to Let's Live It. So she's closing the book out with this statement of Let's Live It, and then I will summarize the book. All right, so Let's Live It. Experiential knowledge is far different than intellectual knowledge. The wisdom of our experience resonates with authenticity throughout the universe, profoundly changing our lives and affecting people that we may never meet. Rupert Sheldrake and his theory of formative causation and morphic resonance has scientifically demonstrated time and again that experiential knowledge is made available to the entire species. What we learn through the experience is added to our collective consciousness. Real knowledge is structured in consciousness. I will be talking about this in my next book on conscious creation. There is so much spiritual knowledge on our planet, knowledge that we don't apply. We don't always nurture it and let it grow into wisdom by using it. Let's not just talk about it or read about it. Let's live it. Perhaps more people would live it if we had a place to share our experiences, listen to other people's experiences, and ask questions about how to live it with people who care. I would imagine being part of an online spiritual community of people who are living it, or at least attempting to live it, and I want to encourage others to do the same. I have shared my experiences with you. Now I would enjoy hearing your experiences and how you have applied the four steps of freedom. Share your experiences and questions at criticaladdiction.com. The stories or experiences you share may inspire others. There are many techniques and ways to peace as there are people, and we learn from each other and then create our own way of doing things. I want to learn from you while you learn from me. Let's experience with living the golden rule. See what happens if you post a sign like this in your home or workplace. Get people talking about it. See if they are willing to commit to using it with each other. Then share what happens on the website. I look forward to connecting with you in the future, perhaps in person or on the web. In the meantime, let's live it. All right, and that wraps up Kaylee Marino's book, and she's encouraging us to live the principles that we've shared throughout this book study. So I want to summarize somewhat what we've learned and what I've personally learned in this book study, and I certainly hope that if you've listened throughout the book study that you've also had some aha moments or some takeaways or things that you can now go and implement in your life to bring you a better awareness of who you are, a better sense of self-awareness. So Kaylee talked about a lot of things in this book in terms of ways that we cover up our inner critic. She talked actually about a lot of ways that support us in moving away from the inner critic, of understanding what the inner critic is and how it plays a role in our life. She gave us some very good advice in terms of naming the inner critic, becoming the observer of the inner critic, not knowing that that inner critic is not who you really are, was the biggest takeaway that I had from this particular book study. Just understanding that that voice in my head was not a result of, you know, it didn't just magically appear. It was created. You know, it was created in my life based on the information and the feedback that I received either as a child or as a young adult. So somehow, you know, that was received, not somehow, though, that was received by the mirror neurons that we have in our mind. So that's also something that I learned that I didn't know before this book, was about the mirror neurons and how our brain actually mirrors what it sees outside of us, and it doesn't really decipher whether it's us actually doing the judging. As far as the judging goes, it doesn't determine whether it's ourselves we're judging or someone else. So that was also a huge thing for me to realize. It makes me very conscious of the judgments that I'm now putting out into the world, because I understand that my mind won't know whether I'm talking about me or someone else. So I'm very careful now when I'm placing judgments. False assumptions was another huge part of this book, a huge takeaway for me personally. You know, we get an idea of how we think things should be, and we never really stop to think that that idea is based on what we think, on what our perception is, on what our beliefs are, on what our wounding or our the negativity that we have still stored up within us. So that's what our assumptions are based off of. So judgments and assumptions are things that I've really learned to examine from a personal perspective before I throw a judgment out there or a false assumption out there. I'm really beginning to examine where that assumption is coming from. You know, is it really true that, you know, whoever's doing whatever, or am I making some false assumptions here? So it's taught me to examine those parts of me that I, before now, have just taken for granted. You know, it's just natural. You know, you've done something. I'm almost, you know, in my mid-40s, so I've acted and reacted a certain way most of my life. So it's work or a challenge, not a challenge, but certainly going to take some active efforts on my part to understand and become more aware of these false assumptions, these judgments that I'm making about other people and other situations. So those were some of the takeaways that I certainly enjoyed from that. And of course, the huge aha I got towards the end of this book study was what I shared with you yesterday about being thankful for what I have, but wanting more. That was a huge aha that I was able to get from studying this book, in terms of the fact that we're all creators, that it's okay to want more. And I've never understood that before I read this book. I've never been able, and I didn't actually share the entire story, because this story is actually about, it's actually about the anatomy of fear-based programming. So, like, the other takeaway that I didn't share yesterday was that originated from a story of when I was much younger, probably 6 or 7 years old. We were out shopping for shoes, and my mother was shopping for sneakers for me and my brother and sister. Well, I wanted a particular pair of sneakers, and my mother looked at me and said, "Listen, you know, money doesn't grow on trees. I have your brother and sister need a new pair of shoes too, so you're going to have to get the ones that are less, you know, these over here." Of course, I wasn't aware of price or, you know, the cost of this versus that. What happened there was I internalized the fact that if I get more, then someone else has to suffer. Okay? This was all something that came to me when I read that last part of the book. It, you know, it wasn't even in the front of my mind. That story, that experience, I never connected that experience to me, you know, wanting more and really resisting, internally resisting more, because my internal thought was, if I get more, then someone else has to go without. Someone else has to not get as much as I have if I choose more for myself or if I want to pursue more. So all these years, that has been embedded in me, that me going for more equals someone else getting less. All right? So in unraveling that, that other thought came to me, that we were born to create. You know, we are created in the Creator's image, and that we are born to create. It's okay to want more. It's okay that I'm here as a creator creating the life that I desire for myself, and it's okay to want more. So all of that whole story, the part about creating more for us being created in the image of the Creator, all of that came to me as I read this last chapter of the book. You know, I got the image of being in the store. It was a huge awakening for me. It helped me so deeply to understand why that was a resistance, why I was resistant about having more in my life. So I'm really looking forward to seeing the evidence of that revelation in my life. I'm looking forward to experiencing more because I really do understand now that I am created to be a creator. So it is my wish that I would move forward and that you would also move forward, I hope, with creating what you truly deserve in this life, that it's not based on perceptions or what the false assumptions is what I did. And of course, at 6 or 7 years old, I didn't know to not turn that into an internal conflict for myself, and neither did you, which is what makes us all innocent from the beginning. We don't know what we don't know. So when I heard those words as a child, it was internalized, not knowing that I, you know, later on down the road, I would probably, you know, go through some challenges because I had those assumptions. You see what I mean there?
I think it would be great to hear from some of the other people that are maybe on the line how this book has impacted them and how they have shifted, if they've had any shift at all, and their awareness. So please, we would love to hear from you this morning. Just press 1 on your telephone keypad and share with us how this book has impacted you.
Okay, and so yes, absolutely, and anyone who wants to share, you're absolutely welcome to press 1, and we'll pull you on to have your, you know, have you share what you have to share as well. So yes, those were some of the huge things that I was able to unravel within my own personal experience as a result of this book study, and I certainly hope that you were also able to have these some huge takeaways as well. So it looks like we have a caller here, so I'll go ahead and bring them on the line. Good morning and welcome to the show.
Hi, Gloria.
Yes, good morning.
Hi, this is Anthony. How are you doing?
Oh, I'm doing wonderful, Anthony. How are you this morning?
Good. Great, great, great. And I'd like to send shout-outs to Cynthia for hosting such a great show, and you co-hosting, and Dr. Reggie. But I want to say I have not caught every segment of your show, but each time I've always got something that has been incredibly revealing. And this particular episode today reminded me of something that Beckwith, the gentleman, it was a part of The Secret. He was out in California.
Michael Beckwith.
He was over in D.C. During the inauguration weekend. And someone invited me to listen to him, so I did. And what stuck out more was we're going back to another book called The Greatest Manifestation in the World. And he talks about in that book that we shouldn't talk from lack. Mm-hmm. And the fact that when you mentioned that, we think from a point of, you know, based on the condition of the world, we think from lack, as if somebody gets this, then someone else is not going to have that. And I remember Beckwith mentioning about that when the economy was telling us that, oh, you know, there's going to be a shortage of this and that. I remember him saying, and I'll tell you, it was very profound. He said he had a conversation with the cabbage. He said he had a conversation with the collard greens and all the foods that grow around the world. And he literally asked them, are you going to stop growing this year? I mean, but just realizing that plants are living entities.
Yes.
Based on my man, what's it, Hopkins, or I might be saying his name wrong, but he said plants communicate also. So we had a conversation with them. And the plants, we respond by saying, no, we plan on growing. So he said, if you are planning on going, and the cabbage plan on going, and collard greens and all the other foods I like plan on going, so where's the shortage?
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, that eases his mind to let him know that, okay, no matter what they're saying, the plant life and the food life itself plans on going. And
right.
That is how we should look at life, is that, okay, if there are shortages, now my mind takes me to that to say, well, should I see anything as a short? No, I shouldn't. Gas, I shouldn't see no shortage.
Right.
Time, I shouldn't see no shortage. Because
it's all based on our perception.
Black.
Yes,
exactly.
It's all based on what we think, how we look at the situation, and that's exactly what this book study has been about. It's been about understanding where we're coming from as an individual, that we're bringing forth all of our stuff when we look at things outside of us. So if you're good and have that strong self-identity, you won't see that. Like you said, Michael Beckwith shared that the plant said, no, we're going to continue to grow. We're continuing on. There's no shortage here. So it's all about the state of mind and where you come from with this. I agree, Anthony, absolutely.
I wanted to also say, let's just kind of take a deep breath and understand, when we look at everything around us, it is a reflection of our thought process.
Everything.
So everything.
Yes.
It is just a projection of our belief. So if we walk around and we say, oh, there are no jobs, there are no jobs, and everybody's repeating, there are no jobs, there are no jobs, we are creating what? No jobs.
No jobs.
It's just a reflection of our thoughts. And so that goes, to me, it's not just how I look at it, but it's what I actually begin to believe. And then, and then in mass consciousness, they all believe it. And the way I love how Star put it last week. She says the universe can only say yes.
That's it.
So if we believe there's no shortage, and we keep repeating that there's a shortage, there's a shortage, there's a shortage, and the universe can only say yes, there's a shortage, because it was designed, it's our genie. The universe is our genie. Your wish is my command. Your wish is my command.
Yes and amen.
And we believe that it's so simple, and we're so used to denying ourselves the joy, the gifts of the spirit. We really deny ourselves these gifts. You know, so it's wonderful to have these conversations, but start living it.
Start living it. Let's live it. Absolutely. Let's live it. Thank you, Anthony. Thank you for chiming in with your comment this morning. Thank you so much. There was one other thing, Cynthia, that I, noticed in this book, and it could be that this wasn't a real... it may not have been something that was on Kaylee's mind when she was writing this book, but she gave us so many great, the 4 steps to freedom. She gave us that. But there's one other thing that I want to mention that we have as a support system for us now, for helping us to release some of this long-standing, whether it's guilt, shame, whatever it is that you've internalized and carried forth and are now projecting out, because it's just like you just said a few moments ago, we see out in the world what's in us. The world is a mirror image of what either we need to grow from, or, we're going to project that out into the world. So the one thing that I didn't hear mentioned in this book that I know is powerful and that I'd like to mention now is the energy that we're currently in supports transformation. You know, there was a lot of hype about 1221, about 1212, and, all this, and after it went by, I guess everybody said, most people probably said, I guess the world's not coming to an end, so we're going to move on. But something happened on 1221. The energy that is available to us now, today in 2013, was not available to support this kind of transformation before now. There was a shift in energy. There was a shift in consciousness that occurred at that timetable. The Mayans predicted it long ago. They never said the world was going to end. That was going to be the end of the world. They said it was going to be an end of an era, an end of an age. And so we left, and now we left the age of Pisces, and now we're in the age of Aquarius. So now there is energy available to us to support us, to help us to transform these belief systems that just wasn't available before now. So that's a huge support system that we have that really is not, you know, I don't hear a lot of talk about that anymore, but it's still the truth. It is still the truth. We are energetic beings. We're made of energy. And energy supports us. Energy flows through us. And we are energy. So it absolutely matters, the energy that's around us influencing us in at any given time. So I just wanted to point out that that is also a powerful support for us at this time. So it's not that you have to go out and make all these corrections and do all these changes. The sheer desire, the sheer fact that you've said, I'm choosing this for myself, is enough for this energy to swoop in and help you to become all that you were created to be. So it's not, I don't want to leave you with the thought that I have to go out and now recreate myself. It's not really necessarily about that. It's about being aware of the areas that may need your attention, because your attention is your strongest asset. Your attention, wherever you put your attention at, is where your energy will go. So where are the places in my life that I need to shine my light of awareness so that I can begin to open that up and live the life of my true potential?
Well, during this time with the energy that's on the planet right now, you will get rude awakenings in terms of what you need to work on. Now, if you guys recall from our study of oneness, it said it's during these times with the energetic vibration that's on the planet, it's going to be very uncomfortable. The things, the areas that you need to work on will be extremely uncomfortable because the vibration is, let's see, how can I put this? Have you guys ever listened to a song and you heard someone play a wrong note?
Mm-hmm.
Or you hear somebody, when they sing off key, the musicians are going one way and then the singer is off key.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't work. It doesn't flow. It's discordant. That is how this energy is now. When your thoughts are not in alignment with the frequency that's on the planet right now, it's not in harmony. And so it makes the dramas that you're going on in your life that need to be shifted, it makes them more pronounced.
Yeah.
Because you're singing on the wrong key.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
So you stick out like a sore thumb, kind of, huh?
Yes. And
mm-hmm.
so we don't have time to go into it right now. We're at the close of the show. But tomorrow we have Himmel Radia coming on. He wrote the book Find You and You Find Everything Else. He is an international expert on the law of attraction. Let me tell you, you guys are going to absolutely love him. This is our next book study. It's going to be amazing. We'll talk about it tomorrow. And we'll have Dr. Reggie take us into our closing prayer.
Thank you, Father, for this beautiful and dynamic lesson of energy and who we are. We know that we're always rising since 12 or 1221 in the cosmic awareness of a new ascension process. And those who are not ready for the cosmic awareness just won't be ready. But everybody is changing planetarily and individually. And we thank you for that love that you have dispensed to us. Let us always know who you are in us, through us, and as us, right here and right now. And thank you for Gloria's presentation and the broadcast. We believe this is so as we go forth in love. And so it is.
And so it is.
And so it is. Thank you.
Thank you, Gloria, for this wonderful journey.
Thank you. Thank you for allowing me to share.